Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press. Saving Western civilization, one student at a time.
If something like this really happened, and it never would happen because, of course, these movies are pure fantasy, entertaining fantasy, the kind of fantasy that gets your heart beating. When I saw Avengers Infinity War, this was a year ago, I believe. I was watching it with my younger brother. We never get to see each other, but we had the opportunity to do so and went to see this movie together. There were people at the end of this film in the theater actually openly weeping because, well, the movie, as many know, just ended with half of the cast and half of the universe of the population of the universe dead with the snap of one's fingers, literally. Now, what would happen if that happened in real life? It wouldn't, but what if it did happen in real life? What would the aftermath of that be like? Welcome back to Issues Etc. On this Wednesday afternoon, we're going to talk about the God-shaped hole in the Avengers universe. Joining us to do so, Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Why do many think that the Avengers saga is pushing religion buttons?
I think it has to do with looking at religion as seeking some kind of emotional release and a sense of transcendence. This is kind of fun for me writing about these topics because this takes me back into the world I worked in when I was teaching at Denver Theological Seminary, and I was teaching about religion and pop culture, the subjects that have led to a lot of my columns through the years and specifically to my book. But this is exactly the sort of thing that if you are a traditional religious believer of one of the major world religions, you have to look at a film like this, or 22 films like this, and say to yourself, this is a signal about something. Something big is happening here, or millions of people, millions and millions of people in a wide variety of cultural context would not be responding to this the way they are. When I look at these films, the first thing I see is miracles. Now, they are miracles that are explained a number of different ways. In the column I've just written about this, a former colleague of mine, Alec Wehner, who still teaches at Palm Beach Atlantic University, he had a brilliant summation of the characters in this universe, the Marvel universe, which is different than the DC Comics universe. But in the Marvel universe, he says, it's a universe of demigods, sorcerers, and engineers. Isn't that an interesting set of words? Now, you get semi-gods who you expect to have transcendent powers of some kind. You get sorcerers who are supposed to do magic, which once again certainly implies that there are other dimensions beside the material world. You have Doctor Strange saying that basically magic is hacking the codes of the universe, which is a quasi-scientific way of saying what? Explaining away magic and miracles. And then finally, you have engineers, Batman and one universe, Iron Man in another, who perform acts that may as well be magic, the way they function, and their scientific powers bring them into contact with transcendent holes into other dimensions, other universes, etc. So there's no question that there's a miraculous look and feel to this world. And that, at the very least, says the laws of basic materialism have been transcended. Now, we're not going to play spoilers here with Avengers Endgame, but I think it's at least pretty well known by now that the Avengers kind of crack time and manage to start working things backward. We'll leave it at that, which implies resurrection and a whole lot of other things. But there's a lot of stuff on the screen. Would you agree? There's a lot of stuff on the screen in these movies that looks miraculous.
Sure.
And don't you think a lot of people yearn for the miraculous? And don't you think that a lot of people wish that when really bad things happened in the world, there were miraculous powers that we could somehow summon that might do something about it? At the very least, it's a mythology. When I watch this thing, when I watch these movies, and I don't take them exceedingly serious. I'm not a fan, but I'll have to admit I liked the original Iron Man, which started off this entire 22-movie arc. I liked it a lot because sarcastic wit kind of appeals to me on some sinful, fallen level. But I have to admit that when I look at these things, what I see is the Greek gods. I see a pantheon of semi-gods with feet of clay and rather, once again, alluding to Alec Weiner's remarks, a kind of comic books meet soap opera sort of feel to it. They have messed up personal lives. They are semi-gods with feet of clay who grow up and mature so that they can cooperate and serve their fellow man. Or other men, or other creatures, or other planets, or whatever. Does that seem like a good moral statement of what's going on in these movies? Feet of clay, growing up a little, working together, helping people.
You quote in one of your pieces Stephen Graydanis, a film critic, and he says that in the follow-up to Avengers Infinity War, Avengers Endgame, there's a major fail, he says. It's not just from an artistic point of view, but a stunted view of how most people on Earth live their lives. What's he talking about?
Theodicy. C.S. Lewis defined theodicy as putting God in the dock. And he's using not like shipping dock. He means God is on trial. And the basic question of theodicy is, why do bad things happen in a world with an all-powerful, loving God? That's the question you hear after tornadoes and hurricanes and school shootings and all kinds of real things that happen in our world. And the reporters show up and they stick microphones in people's faces, and the people say, I prayed and I prayed and I prayed, and maybe someday I'll understand why God lets these things happen. Theodicy is one of the oldest and most accurate presentations of how human beings relate to tragedy and loss. And so what he's observing is that when you start the new movie Endgame, if you're dealing with human beings on planet Earth, which is at least a fairly large part of the people in these movies, maybe they're gods from other planets, but when you're dealing with people on planet Earth, he says you expect to see people going to church, going to the synagogue, going to mosques. They're going to go somewhere to mourn and to grieve. And as I put it, I mean, they're dealing with a God-shaped hole in this plot of this 22-movie arc. And you expect people to be asking the question that you've seen over and over in Shakespeare and in all great art about the human condition. Where is God? Now, at the start of Endgame, you have people going to therapy. You have people grieving, but that's about it. And most of all, you don't have anyone asking this ultimate question. And he just says that this has to make you wonder about the decisions made by the large and complex team of people who made these movies. Now, he would admit that some of these movies have a spiritual dimension and have statements that would fit into debates within a Judeo-Christian world. The best example of that would be Doctor Strange. I think you and I have discussed the fact that at the big moment of Doctor Strange, one Eastern mystical, magical character turns to the other and quotes the opening line of the purpose-driven life. It's not about you. Okay, not all of these movies are the same, but when you're dealing with the really big movies of the Avengers set, especially these last two, I think the last two movies, it's fair to look at them as some sort of big statement of what this whole thing has been about. This last almost what? Almost 6 hours of movie? 5.5 hours of movie? What's it about? And Graydon says basically it's about characters with feet of clay gradually maturing so that they can work together to help their fellow man, which is kind of a moralistic, therapeutic deism sort of thing with maybe some sort of vague right and wrong. But these movies don't even have a higher power or an ultimate frame in them. They're not even consistent on something like that. Now, here's what I think is fascinating. Look, think of it in two practical ways. If this new movie had opened with funeral after funeral after funeral, and a lot of them or most of them were set in clearly Christian settings. There was a funeral in one of the earlier films, and Captain America, who is kind of like a symbol of America at World War II, he's the one character that's kind of allowed to be Christian or a theist. And you have a funeral that takes place with stained glass windows and a cross over the altar and the whole bit. And of course, you have the famous line from Captain America when he's talking about the demigod Loki, when someone says, you know, these people are from another planet. They're like gods or something. And Captain America famously responds, there's only one God, ma'am, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that. That's like the one theistic statement that I know of in the Avengers arc. But, you know, hey, that's an American from the 40s, right? You let him get away with that. Everything else, you have all kinds of spiritualities, like in the Black Panther. You have miracles and other dimensions all over the place. Why? What's this all about? Graydonis is cynical enough to say, if you had a lot of things happen in churches, is that going to help you get permission to air these movies across the Muslim world? The answer would probably be not so much. Then look at it this way. What if you had lots of scenes of characters going into mosques to hear sermons by imams and discussions of what this all might mean, you know, in light of Muslim faith? Is that going to help you get permission to air this movie in China, which is currently striving to lock up several million Muslims for various reasons in different parts of that country? At some degree, what we have here is mythology meets materialism. And you can put this in a lot of movie theaters if it's got vague spirituality but doesn't have anything that offends anybody. Cynical, but I think that's the best explanation for what's going on.
So we have this universe that is populated with, as you said, what was it? Demigods.
Sorcerers and engineers.
I would also note, Terry, that the engineers have to have unlimited wealth. So you mentioned Batman and Tony Stark. They're both, Bruce Wayne and Tony Stark are both so rich that money is not an object. So that the technology, obviously, well, I just bought it, you know.
Stark, I would say Stark almost has a brain that functions as a superpower. Don't you get the impression that at times he has like an otherworldly ability to see equations? And it's not just because he's in a suit that's hooked up to mainframes. I think his superpower is supposed to be his brain. But yeah, you're right. He couldn't do any of it without his wallet. Okay, go ahead.
But what does that say? Because, and I'm intrigued by this, because we can lay aside Thor and the Hulk and all these. They are either through technology or through origins elsewhere, they are godlike figures. And we can kind of shove the Doctor Stranges over into the side where they've learned to unlock the secrets of the universe, whatever in the world that means. But these characters that stand at the center of these universes, they really do. They are the central characters, are fully human and nothing more than human.
Who are you putting in that category other than Iron Man?
Batman
and
yes.
DC?
Yes.
Wouldn't you say Superman is the main character of DC?
Well, not in the movies anymore.
Well, you know. I think that has to do with the quality of the people who decided to make the movies. You know, I think that in the – and I'm not an expert on comic book theology, mythology, whatever. My friend Alec Wainer has written the book on that. But I think you have the man standing in the gate, the great existential man who's Batman, and then you have Superman, who is normal in another universe, but when you put him in ours, if he isn't a demigod, who is? Or if he isn't a magical character, who is? But even there, you try to say, well, there's kryptonite, which means he follows physical laws. Here's the thing that I think is really fascinating. Let's look at some other recent massive successful arcs. The ones that immediately come to mind for me are Star Wars, Star Trek, and Lord of the Rings. Big, huge sequel after sequel. They created other worlds. Can we agree with that? They created other worlds. Well, in Tolkien's case, you have another world that literally is rooted in a man's Catholicism. That's pretty explicit. When you look at Star Wars, you have George Lucas, to whatever degree he's successful, kind of taking a Western view of absolute right and wrong, and then with the help of Joseph Campbell's comparative religions, wedding that into some sort of Eastern, almost Buddhist view of the universe. And he ends up with his own, The Force Be With You, which is a paraphrase of the Episcopal Book of Common Prayer. Okay, I mean, but you can say, okay, Lucas created it. If we can understand Lucas, we kind of understand the worldview of this. The same thing is true with Star Trek, except leaning even more over toward Buddhism, you know, and starting off with the, you know, the prime directive that there is nothing that isn't essentially cultural, so rules are different from universe to universe. All of that. Now, what is the point of view? Who is the artist that stands behind the Marvel Universe? In this case, there is no one artist. There are massive numbers of people, and Graydonis, again, cynically, says basically, when you look behind the Marvel Universe, you get the ultimate statement of our modern world, from politics to art to business to automobiles to soda pop, whatever. You get a focus group. That essentially we're going to solve the problems of the world through miracles that have been run past a focus group to not offend anybody, but to still excite them, especially when you crank up the soundtrack and the special effects. So the ultimate value of the Marvel Universe is essentially a charge card. And that's what I wonder, how many ministers would have the Jewish word chutzpah, Yiddish word, would have the chutzpah to go into a pulpit and kind of point this out. Why do these movies excite us so much? We want miracles. We want right to be done. We want good versus evil. But based on what? Based on what view of reality? As crazy or as mythical as something like Lord of the Rings is, there's no question about the artist's view of reality. And I would say at the other end of that continuum, there's not much of a question about the view of reality from the committees at Disney that gave us this 22-volume mythology of our world.
Fascinating quote you have at the end of your piece on this. You say, it's entertainment to the max. Its myths are us. What does that mean?
Well, it's myths are us. And they're like Toys R Us is what he's playing around with. At least that's how I chose to punctuate it. Since this was an audio interview, Alec didn't write that out. He's saying that it's like we go to the Cinemax and all these myths are for sale. And you pick out the myths that make you feel good. And this is those myths cranked up to stunning levels of pop culture power. Talk about unlimited budgets and massive amounts of talent and skill and special effects and everything. Myths are us. This really does seem to satisfy. And like you said, when you can have people sitting in a theater weeping, this isn't just a story. It's operating at some deeper level. And I would say ministers, I mean, what do you think is the target audience for Avengers? A lot of people would say, this is youth culture. Really? This thing is 10 years old? I mean, if you signed on to the Avengers when you were 16 or 17, you're cranking it. You're going to hit 30 soon. I'm not even sure we can call this youth culture. This is our culture. I don't know what makes me think this, although I just used the charge card image. I always remember sitting on a bridge in Moscow. This is a leap of logic, but go with me for a second. I'm sitting on a bridge in Moscow with Father Alexander Borisov of the Russian Bible Society, and it's like 2 weeks after the fall of the Soviet Union. And we're watching traffic, and we're watching some missionaries beginning to work the Russian people. Hare Krishna is out on the street corner and all this. And Father Borisov said something that I thought of again recently, thinking about the Coptic Church and its battles with Egypt. Borisov said, we have seen how Russia can deal with a tyranny of iron, how the Russian church can deal with a tyranny of iron. We will now have to see how we handle a tyranny of plastic. And when he said that, he held up a charge card. Do you think there would be many pastors who would be bold enough to go into a pulpit and talk about that in relation to these films?
I don't think so. Maybe because they'd have to connect too many dots. But
oh, you don't think the people in the pews, the vast majority of them, have seen these things?
Oh, no, I know they've seen them, but I think it might take a little effort. The thing I was wondering about was not so much the correlation between kind of the Christian message to what is revealed by this 22-movie saga, but I wonder if someone's going to sit down and say, this franchise that has outdone, you mentioned them before, it's outdone Star Wars, it's outdone Star Trek, and it's outdone Lord of the Rings, it's outdone Harry Potter. It's blown them all completely out of the water in terms of its longevity and its success, if only in terms of money. Must say something about our society. Is someone going to sit down and try and correlate it to the rise of the nuns? If it's a godless universe.
Well, no, I think this is emotionally not a godless universe. These movies show us how you can tell stories that appeal to evangelicals in their minivans as much as it appeals to nuns, N-O-N-E-S, secularist, whatever. We can all go to the theater and feel a sense of release, knowing that there is good in the world and the universe and things will be okay. I don't see any indication that religious people in America go to see these films any less than secular people. This is the religious mythology that's at the top of the chart right now. Maybe Harry Potter was last decade. But Harry Potter, of course, was written by a liberal Christian and has a lot of Christian material in it, but we don't have time for that discussion. But looking at Marvel, they haven't even allowed God to play as much of a role as God is allowed to play as the hidden hand figure in the DC universe, where there's kind of an implied God at several points. In this particular set of movies, I love it, demigods, sorcerers, and engineers. Greek gods with feet of clay, evolving somehow morally of their own free will until they can help us all through great sacrifice. I don't know whether that scares me. I don't think it scares me. It kind of makes me sad. But at the same time, what else do we expect from our current world? What else do we expect from the world of Google, Instagram, Facebook, the shopping mall? The shopping mall now is even losing out to the internet. What do we expect out of our digital principalities and powers? If not, something that answers religious questions but doesn't have any religious demands. Go buy what you want. That's kind of our world.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for your time.
Glad to be here.
Dr. Gabriella Haynes joins us from Answers in Genesis on the other side of the break. There was a discovery some decades ago of a bone fragment, I believe it was a piece of a jawbone, that is alleged to come from a forerunner to modern humans. We'll find out what's being claimed about this and how very little evidence, both in terms of fossil and DNA in this case, they are working with. Stay tuned. Nadia Bolz Weber calls for a sexual reformation in her latest book, Shameless. How does her reformation compare with the truths rediscovered during the 16th century Reformation? I've written a review of Shameless in the latest Issues Etc. journal. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button on the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Pastor Andrew Abraham details his journey from Catholic priest to Lutheran pastor. The free online Issues Etc. journal.
Emmanuel Press is a Lutheran-owned business in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in operation since 2004. That's 15 years of publishing liturgical and devotional books, 15 years of collaborating with Lutheran authors, artists, and translators. Thanks to our loyal customers and Issues Etc., we look forward to many more years of confessing and teaching the Christian faith. Visit us online at emmanuelpress.us, E-M-M-A-N-U-E-L, press.us.
We love our on-demand listeners. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I'm going to talk about two big trends in American life over the last 50 or 60 years, the decline of institutional Christianity and the growing polarization of our politics.
Ross Douthat of the New York Times talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
The increasingly strident division between an ideological left and an ideological right. And I'm going to argue that Christianity has weakened precisely because people have become more likely to identify with ideologies than with religious beliefs, and that a recovered Christianity, a more robust public religious faith, is actually an answer to polarization because it gives people an identity that's bigger than partisanship so they can define themselves as Christians first and liberals or conservatives second.
You can meet and hear Ross Douthat at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference June 7th and 8th in Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org.